Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host, Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
People want to make it work. They want to make it work together. And I will protect their rights and the rights of everybody.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the John Gambling Show.
What the city should be doing are those things that are absolutely critical, where we can do it better than the private side.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
All right, Bill Rock, thank you very much. It is a Friday, and Mayor Michael Bloomberg is with us via the phone this morning from Idaho. How you doing, Mr. Mayor?
Salt Lake City, Idaho. It's kind of hard not to look at the weather and the mountains. It's beautiful out here, and say it's a good time. I'm also, keep in mind, I'm also working for the people of the city of New York.
Oh, we would never forget that. I mean, we actually talked about it earlier this morning. It's pretty interesting. This is one of these big seminar get-togethers of media people, right?
More media, but lots of different industries. High tech is a very big factor here. It's interesting. People are really worried about what's happening in the economy, all the things we've been talking about every week, and the numbers are starting to hit New York. We're starting to see declines in housing prices and increase in unemployment. Wall Street clearly is going through some very tough times, and it's really scary for all of us, and hopefully those in Washington can provide the help that they can, and the rest of us will provide some sanity. I don't think the world's coming to an end. I think the future of America is probably as bright as it's ever been. Having said that, anybody that thinks that we're not going to have a next 6 months, a year, year and a half of very tough times is probably sadly mistaken.
What do you make of the Phil Graham remarks yesterday of whining and mental recession?
Well, the old joke is a depression if it's your job, but it's just a downturn if it's somebody else's job. I think the next president's going to have some real issues to face here, one of which is obviously the housing crisis. Housing is particularly important because if you lose your house, number one, you and your family are now on the streets needing help, lots of different services. That's expensive to society and clearly tragic for that family. But it's worse than that because it starts to destabilize the neighborhood. Now there's an empty house, and we all know what happens. People don't cut the lawn, and it brings down property values, and others move away. And so facing the housing crisis is one thing. Also, until housing prices stop declining, none of these Wall Street firms or anybody else can figure out what all these different mortgage-derived securities are worth. So that's one real problem. Number two, we have a downturn worldwide in trade. There are a lot of people who are against free trade, and the more that kind of talk happens, the worse it's going to hurt the economy. The solution for our growth problems is immigration into this country and free trade. Those are the two keys that will keep us going. It's interesting. I had dinner the other night with the governor of the state of Idaho and his wife. And Idaho is a state with 1.4 million people. It's not really very diverse. They just don't have the luxury of lots of different cultures coming in and adding. Still, they're doing pretty well. But they face the same problems we do. It's just on such a different scale. And the people of Idaho are worried about the future of America and themselves. So we're going to have some tough times here, John. And my hope is that what we've done in New York City over the last half a dozen years will mitigate the pain and let us get through it with less disruption and less hurting people than we would have otherwise. Fortunately, along with the city council, we didn't spend as much as we could have. We probably could have spent less, but the political realities are that in good times, everybody wants services, and they say when bad times, we'll worry about them when they come, and incidentally, they're never going to come. Well, wake up, they're here, and your report just before your program on what's going on in the markets around the world. You know, you take a look, American stock markets are down 15% this year, more from where they were last October, which was a high. European markets are all down 25% this year. Asian markets, 25 to 40, 50%. The two main stock markets in China are down 40 and 45% this year. So there's a lot of people getting hurt. Their savings are being eroded. Having said that, The good news is that our school systems are getting better, and that's the future of this country. We're having a spirited debate with two candidates that are different, and that's what democracy should be, and we're the envy of the world in many senses on that. You know, we're able to stand these kinds of things and keep going.
All right, New York City certainly at the center of a lot of things, innovative, and some of the, obviously, as you just painted the picture, pointing to some of the major problems that everybody is facing. On Sunday, you're going to be out in Cincinnati, are you not?
Flying out to Cincinnati to give a speech at the NAACP annual conference, which is going to be held in New York next year. We're honored to host them, but this one's in Cincinnati, nice town. Like the mayor, and have a number of friends there, so I'm looking forward to going out. The talk is going to be about, or what I'm going to talk about, is we've tried to come up with a new measure of poverty. Now you say, wait a second, what's so hard about this? Well, it is hard to measure. The poverty measures that everybody uses, and you have to have data. If you're going to design a program to help people you want to help but not waste any money, you've got to know what's really going on out there, and the poverty measures that have been used are the same ones of 40 years ago. 40 years ago, people worried about the real poor in our country didn't have a roof over their head and didn't have food in their stomachs. Today, in all fairness, the level of poverty is different. There are very few people in this country sleeping on the streets. In New York City, for example, the population of 8.2 million, we estimate roughly 3,000, and we really do work hard to get them to come into shelters. And people don't starve to death in our country the way they do elsewhere. Having said that, there's an awful lot of people in this country who are really poor, who struggle, work very hard, can't share in the great American dream. Kids don't get the kind of nutrition they need. And so what we're trying to do is to come up with a measure that looks at the needs of people today and also the things that we're doing. The current poverty measures, for example, don't give you any credit if we give somebody food stamps or a Section 8 voucher or other kinds of aid. And that's not fair. The public is spending its money to help people. That should reduce poverty. On the other hand, what people need today is different than what they needed before. So anyways, we're trying to come up with some numbers that make a little more sense. And then we can use that in determining what we should do. And if you take a look at the Post, I think it was, had a story showing arguing that welfare rolls have come down dramatically.
Yeah, I've got that. I've got those in my notes here. 5.6% from last year and 26% since you took office.
Well, you know, it really started before that. Rudy Giuliani deserves a lot of credit. Some people are going to scream, but Rudy did. What Rudy did was he cut out any corruption. He focused on people who were getting aid but didn't deserve it. And he also started the program of trying to get people to work the requirement to work if they wanted help. I think it's fair to say we've taken both those things and we've taken them to the next level, and hopefully whoever comes after us will take them to even another level. But that was the first big reduction in the poverty numbers. And then Linda Gibbs and all of the staff from Human Resources and Homeless Services and ACS and all of these different agencies have worked very hard to continue to help people get a job, have the dignity of a job, and become self-supporting. Nobody wants to have people that the state has to support. It'd be great if the state didn't have to support anyone. After all, why is that not a desirable thing? But we're not there yet. And between what we inherited and built on, what these new numbers will let us do to focus the resources, we've got to make sure that the people that get aid are the people that deserve it, the people that want to help themselves. And, you know, there's a lot of people that just punch the time clock every day and they just can't make ends meet. It's what we call the working poor, and we're trying to do some things for them. They're doing everything that we're asking them, but because they didn't get an education or because they just didn't get lucky in where they lived or what their life experiences were, they just can't get out of this rut, and we've got to help them.
We're talking with Mayor Michael Bloomberg, as we do each and every Friday here on the John Gambling Show. It's 18 minutes after 8 o'clock. This is going to be abbreviated because you've got someplace to go. I understand that.
Got to give a speech.
Okay, and what's the topic of that one?
I'm going to talk about Sam Nunn and I. Sam Nunn is a retired senator from Georgia, probably one of the smartest guys that has ever been in Congress, certainly one of the most thoughtful and nice guys. And he and I are going to be interviewed by Charlie Rose, and, you know, you'd have to be a guest of this conference to get the. I can't give you a free scoop there, John. Come on.
All right, let me ask you. I mean, you've been going green. You must be hanging out with Kermit the Frog or something. But you want the city to go green for all the right reasons that you've explained to us before. What's with the Broadway Boulevard that we hear about today, running from 42nd Street to Herald Square? Is this a permanent situation?
Number one, Jeanette Sedekon keeps coming up with an idea a day. She is absolutely brilliant, and she really is making a difference. What she's trying to do here is, if you look, Broadway is two lanes going south down to 42nd Street, and then from 34th Street further on. It's four lanes between those two. She wants to take it down to two the whole ways, which she doesn't think will have a material effect on traffic, and give us a lot more room to walk on the streets and to get people, you know, out of their cars and walking, which is good for their health and also good for the environment. Like all these things, I think, you know, Jeanette is very good at working. She's worked with the local community organizations and the advocacy groups and the elected officials, and they love her because she includes them, and you know, everybody wants to try new things, and if this works, that'll be great. Her idea of closing Park Avenue all the way downtown from, I guess, 7 in the morning till 1 in the afternoon, three Saturdays during August will be interesting to see. A lot of people think it's a great idea. If the traffic is impossible, we'll learn that lesson and won't do it again. If it turns out that it's very popular and doesn't hurt traffic in the rest of the city, it's an idea that we should think about expanding. But we got to keep trying new things, and that's what she's trying to do. In terms of the environment, we did announce last week spending $2.3 million to try to make the city's own buildings more efficient. If we can do it in the city with our own buildings, then the private sector, when we preach to them and say, hey, you can do this and you'll save a lot of money, they'll look at it and say, well, look, it works because the city already did it. And we're not, I've criticized the federal government, still do. They set goals for 2050. We've set goals to get, you know, that we can manage here. 2017 to reduce by 30% the carbon footprint of the city buildings. 2017, we're going to have a lot of these programs. I think we're going to be ahead of schedule, and maybe we can do it before then. But we're doing it ourselves before we ask anybody else to do it.
I was surprised to see the bike sharing idea come back, because you and I talked about it a bunch of weeks ago, and you said that you weren't quite sure it would work.
I will say I am skeptical, but my secretary at City Hall, Irene Pistorino, just got back from trying to learn to speak French in Paris. And she'd saved up all her vacations and went over. I can't get a good handle on how well she speaks French after all this time. But she did have a good time, she said. But she went on and on. She said she did. You walk up, you stick your credit card in, you jump on the bike, you ride someplace, you stick it back in to a rack. And she said she just used it all the time. So maybe it would work here. I don't know. But Jeanette's going to see if anybody's interested in, as a commercial venture, paying for it, and then we'll see.
All right, speaking of travel, I had to chuckle to myself reading in one of the tabloids this week about bus ridership and how crowded the buses are, obviously much of that due to the fact that people leave their cars at home. And I had to think to myself, well, this problem is only going to get worse.
Well, you know, it's a little bit – the MTA, who I have – plenty of reasons to complain about, in this case, probably is getting a little unfair rap. I think the numbers are the following, John. The number of new buses that we've put on the roads in the last, I don't know, 10 years or something, is more than all the buses in almost every city in America.
That's a lot of buses.
And these are just the new buses. You know, we put on more new buses than Boston has buses, or Minneapolis has buses. So, you know, the MTA is trying to expand. What they're seeing is people are leaving their cars home, surprise, surprise, with the price of gasoline. That's exactly what you'd think would happen. The sad thing is that we've got to spend money to get more new buses to go and serve different parts of the city where currently there aren't bus routes. And we've got to expand the subway system, and everybody wants more security, and we want the buses to go faster, all of that stuff. So We need to get another source of revenue for capital projects for the MTA. And also the MTA, as you know, has budgetary problems of just paying, getting enough money to run the existing buses. But they have added a lot of capacity, in all fairness. And what you're seeing is, I think, just a little bit of some people complaining. There's never going to be enough buses for you unless the instant you get to your corner, there's a bus empty, with its door open, ready to rush you without any traffic.
Well, that's what I would expect. That's what I would expect in each and every turn.
Absolutely. Everybody wants it. I hate to break this to you, John. There's a little bit of something called a cost of doing that.
Exactly. So let's to the future for just a moment here. Your term comes up. You've got how many days left?
About 535, something like that.
I figured you'd know the answer to that. The control of school sunsets. Merrill control of school sunsets next year. How can we make sure that that doesn't sunset?
Well, it's up to the legislature. They have to be willing to stand up to people who want to run the school system for the benefit of those working in the school system, as opposed to those who are. We're supposed to be serving the children. The most interesting panel at this conference was a panel yesterday. Joel Klein led a panel where a woman who runs some charter schools in New York runs the public school system in Washington, D.C., and a principal from a school in Chicago. All talked about what they were doing in public education, and it was fascinating, and it was riveting. Everybody in the audience just went on and on. We've got to go and address the problem of helping our kids. And what worries me is that the people who have children in school and the people who care about public education, which should be all of us, incidentally, because the kids in school today are going to take care of you and me when we are old and infirmed. I know that's never going to happen to you, John, but I'm getting there. They're the voters of tomorrow, and you want to make sure that they get a good education. And it'll be fascinating. In Washington, D.C., they've negotiated a union contract, which hopefully will get approved, although there's some outside unions that are trying to stop it. I will say this. The United Federation of Teachers and the Principals Union here, both of these unions have negotiated very far-reaching contracts with New York City that try to address the issue of focusing on children. It's not everything the city wants, but both these unions deserve a lot of credit for being willing to stand up and go against conventional wisdom. We have performance pay for principals and for teachers. We've reduced some of the seniority. The only thing that's gone wrong recently is this disgraceful act by the Albany legislature, which keeps us from looking and seeing whether a teacher can teach decide whether they get tenure or not. But hopefully the public will yell and scream and force them to change that.
And hopefully, then we'll see. Yeah, hopefully they're not going to change this Merrill control, because things are moving in just the right direction. We're not there yet, but we got to keep the course going straight.
We have become the poster child for this country and maybe for the world of what you do with a big school system, how you reform it and try to get it to give the results that we need for the competitive global world of tomorrow for our kids. Accountability and measurement and focusing on the children and results rather than on just making it a place where anybody can get a job. Quality of the teachers in New York City keeps going up. They keep working as hard as any group of teachers. We are so blessed with a great group of teachers and principals. And, you know, it's some people don't want to work. Some people don't want to be measured. I mean, somebody said yesterday in this panel, and they couldn't have been more right. How could you run anything if you didn't measure what you do? And those schools that really have had enormous improvements keep checking every month, every whatever, every period of how well the teachers are doing. If you don't do that, you can't make it any better. That's called testing. And then there's this crazy notion, some people, we don't want to test our kids. If you don't test your kids, you don't know which ones are getting the message and which ones need more help. How can you give more help to those who need it if you don't know which ones they are? And the only way you should do that is by testing and making sure that the kids understand they have a responsibility.
It's turned upside down, the whole thing.
It is, and you and I and everybody else, we are crazy enough to sit here and let a handful of people who don't want any measurements and want to hurt, fundamentally, I don't know if they want to hurt our kids, but they are doing it. we don't make a big enough stink. And so the legislature just sits there and says, well, these people care. The other one, the public doesn't seem to. So, you know, I don't need to have the aggravation of somebody screaming at me.
All right. Speaking of measurements and holding people's feet to the fire, World Trade Center, again, some noise yesterday from Shelley Silver and families of those that have lost people in 9/11 about the memorial and not being in on time. I'll tell you, Chris Ward over at the PA said that he wouldn't be making any new schedules, and this morning we see new schedules.
Well, I haven't looked yet at what came out yesterday. We raised $350 million privately from some very generous companies and people and foundations around the world. There's, you know, 1,000 people who've contributed. And that's the part that you and I can do. I've always said that this is an enormously complex project down at the World Trade Center site, and whether it could be done better, I don't know. Chris Ward is a very competent guy, and the John Corzine's appointee, the chairman, Tony Kushner, is as smart a guy as you'd need to, as you could find. And, you know, together they've got to, they need some help from the rest of us rather than just sitting around and criticizing. It is easy to say, oh, I would do this, I would do that. But the reality is you have so many different government agencies and courts, and you have advocacy groups, and you have insurance companies and the private sector. Everybody's involved here. I had a meeting, a long conversation with Larry Silverstein the other day. We've got to get the Deutsche Bank building down, because if you don't do that, that's the entrance for trucks to get into the buildings that he's building. You know, everybody's got to, whether the schedules were too optimistic or not, I don't know. I don't remember anybody saying when those schedules came out, oh, slow them down just so we are sure. Everybody said, yes, we've got to do it right, but let's do it right now. And then, you know, make sure the design's perfect, but where is it? And, you know, we want it both ways, and unfortunately it can't happen.
You got a crowd forming up in Central Park for the John Bon Jovi concert tomorrow night.
Bud Selig, who is the head of Major League Baseball, is here, and I was talking to him yesterday about it. I think it's going to be a great concert. The whole All-Star game, it's not a game, it's a week of activities in New York, is going to add a lot to our economy, and it's going to give the message around the country and around the world that New York's a great place to come and visit and spend your tourist dollars and invest and get an education. The Bon Jovi concert is part of it. We are very sensitive of trying to make sure that the lawn in Central Park that was renovated after the Dave Matthews concert, if you remember. In those days, it was a dust bowl. Today, yeah. It's fantastic. My recollection is something like $15 million was raised privately to redo that. We certainly don't want to ruin that. So what we've done is we have a procedure where if anybody wants to have a concert, it's first come, first serve. You can apply. We only allow, I think it's 6 a year. Major League Baseball did the right thing. They got the right to do this. We've said there's 50,000 people that can fit into the area, or this maybe, I think it's 6 areas that looks like one big area, but we block it off so that we, for security reasons, we can get in there if somebody has a heart attack or something. And those people, the first 50,000 that get there, will get in. If you come afterwards, we will try to accommodate you outside, further away from the concert.
Yeah, I heard that was Staten Island.
No, it's not Staten Island. Come on. You'll still be able to have a great time. You'll still be able to hear the concert. And somebody said to me, oh, well, it's not fair. I've got a ticket. Well, you got the ticket for nothing. And, you know, we don't know. Unfortunately, we can't control who gets these tickets very well. So we've given out more tickets than we have room for in the central area. If only the number that fits shows up, everybody will be there. If more people show up, first come, first serve basis, and you'll just be a little bit further away. But it's the only practical ways to do it when you're giving something away.
Absolutely so. You've got to go to your speech. I will let you go. We'll see you next Friday. Thank you very much.
Looking forward to it, John. And, you know, I think there's a lot of doom and gloom out there. There's reason to be cautious. I don't think there's reason to think that we're not going to have a future. Will we have to work for it? You betcha.
You bet your life. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Appreciate it. Well, Mayor Michael Bloomberg this morning here on the John Gambling Show, abbreviated because he's in Idaho giving a speech, I think, probably within the next half hour or so. Let's take a break right here.